good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here on Radio Liberty are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and the views of our callers. And we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But hold your calls for the time being, please. We have with us on the line Cal Grunwald, and we're going to be talking about really what's happening economically throughout the world today, and specifically here in the United States. And you know, it's a very interesting phenomenon as we're raising the interest rate systematically to actually hold down the tendency towards inflation, which is produced by producing more money than putting excess money into circulation. So you raise the interest rates, and ordinarily you cut back on increasing the amount of money you're putting out. In fact, you maybe actually begin contracting the money supply. But here, for the first time in all history, when we're raising the interest rates to slow down the pressure of inflation, we're actually increasing the amount of money that we're putting out, which is creating a terrible conflict of economic purposes, and of course is laying us up for a serious downturn, a serious collapse of the economic system as we begin moving into a condition of stagflation. And of course, as we're systematically dismantling the productive capacity of our nation, actually financing our corporations as they move overseas, and encouraging them and giving special tax breaks so that they will leave this country and move to other countries, in perhaps in communist China, and have their industrial base there. Where are we going to be able to have the wealth to maintain our living standards? And already many, many people who were making $50,000 to $100,000 a year are now making $20,000 to $30,000 a year. And when you find well-trained engineers, 50 years old, driving taxis in America, this is becoming increasingly frequent. And more people, once they lose their good-paying jobs, are having difficulty getting jobs that pay comparably. As you know, why General Motors has said they're going to eliminate some 30,000 jobs. Ford is talking about doing the same. Whirlpool is laying off its people here, moving its production down south of the border. We've lost our textile industry. We've lost most of our steel industry. We're losing most of our manufacturing industry. They're shipping our architectural jobs. About 10 to 15% of them are now done over in India. They're even doing our income tax forms in India. And many of our large corporations that do income tax are sending them over there. They're even doing legal work over there. And you can get legal work done in India, the research for cases, far cheaper than you can get it done here in America. And at each turn, why you're losing more and more jobs from America. Well, our guest this evening, Cal Grunwald. Cal, what are your thoughts about what's going on?
Well, I would echo everything you said, and probably more. People don't realize how serious the problem is, because the media is constantly telling us, this is reading the Wall Street Journal now, you know, how FedEx had a 33% profit the last quarter, and you know, now we've turned the corner, and they're raising interest rates to slow down the growth, and you know, this growth is better and that growth is better, and you can't find any bad news anymore. Everything is all roses.
Well, I think that things are not nowhere near that good. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, Cal, you pick up the story there, because, of course, you and I both know that they're not telling us the truth, and so much in the Wall Street Journal is aimed at making us feel good about things. In fact, so much in most of the media is to draw our attention from the fact that we are on the edge of what I believe is financial Armageddon. We're totally dependent upon other countries to buy our treasury debt, and over 99% of our treasury bills now are being bought not by American investors, but by foreign investors, at least according to something I got recently from Bob Chapman. And increasingly we're finding some foreign central banks selling American Treasury bills, specifically Switzerland, but the people who are keeping us afloat are Great Britain and China and Japan and to a lesser extent Germany. So what are your thoughts, you know, where are we really headed?
Well, we're headed down pretty fast, and the majority of people don't realize it. They're just sitting in their living rooms thinking that life's going to go on and they're going to continue to have their jobs and raise their families. But as I talk to people around the country, they're seeing a different picture. Even in Lake Detroit, there's over 50% unemployment in Detroit, and now there's a real severe problem with looting in the suburbs. A lot of robberies out there, and this is what we're going to be seeing now more and more as the unemployment increases, and of course they're cooking those numbers. As the unemployment raises around the country, and as you said, you can't get a comfortable job anymore to meet the needs of your family, then people are just going to resort to whatever they have to do to get what they need, and that's not a very good situation, but that's what's ahead of us, I think, relatively soon.
Well, you know, it's really very interesting. If you begin looking at what's happening to the pension funds, and there are an awful lot of people who really are relying upon the pensions they're going to get. Certainly they know that the Social Security will not provide all of their needs. It's pretty hard to live on what Social Security gives you, even if both the husband and the wife are getting Social Security. And so many people think that they're going to get their pension funds from their corporations. But remember, the corporations have invested their pension funds largely, in the stock market. And if those stocks turn south, why, of course, there's not going to be the money there. Even many of our state and local pension funds are invested in the stock market. And increasingly, why there are real problems with our pensions. In fact, we're finding many of our major corporations going bankrupt and turning those pension funds over to these pension fund guarantee plan, U.S. government, that is about $26 billion in the hole right now. And, of course, it has no possibility of ever being able to pay all the pensions they're committed to. We'll be right back here. Well, I guess this evening is Cal Grunwald. Cal, go ahead and just get your thoughts out onto what's really going on in the world.
Well, again, that point you're making is very good about the pension funds. I'm reading an article here out of the USA Today back in November 15th. I think I sent that article to you. The headline is Fundamentally Broken Pension System is in Crying Need of a Fix. And it talks about here that the, in total it says the defined benefit pension plans offered by private employers are underfunded by $450 billion, up from $39 billion just 5 years ago. So 5 years ago these pension funds were short by $39 billion, now they're short by $450 billion. So it's snowballing downhill so fast, and, you know, these people work hard all their life, you know, in sincerity for a company, and they put the money away in the pension fund. The pension fund, as you said, they invested in the stock market or things that are high risk, and the money is just not there. A lot of these companies, now they're finding out they haven't even put money in the pension funds. They just say they are, and they're just cooking the books and, you know, producing numbers, and the money's just not there. So what are people going to do?
Well, I think, at one time, why, we were a frugal people, and people saved money for the retirement. That was what you did. Increasingly, why, people have not been saving money. In fact, it was very interesting. I was reading Bob Chapman's international forecaster, and he was pointing out that, you know, a little over 11% of our people have significant savings in the bank, you know, maybe as much as $250,000. Well, if you invest that at the current rates, why, you couldn't live very well. Their major, of course, investment is their home, and they have a great deal of equity in their home. But if the prices of homes begin to fall, as we anticipate they will, why, of course, they will lose the equity they have there. A lot of people have sold their homes recently, especially here in California, got exorbitant amounts of money for them. One of our good friends had left Santa Cruz, where he'd lived for many years, and with the money, why, he moved up into the Washington area. He actually bought a couple of duplexes and a couple of rentals and then a couple of homes up there from what he got from his one home here in Santa Cruz. Another one of our supporters had sold a home over in the Salinas area for, I think, $700,000, something like that. Moved to San Antonio, bought a home for about $200,000, beautiful home in a gated community. And he's got about $500,000 of profit. And, of course, my advice to him was get that invested in something that will not lose its value, because we are on the edge of doing what so many other countries that have had a fiat money system have done, and that is the total depreciation of the value of money. It's only a matter of time. In fact, one of the most interesting things I noticed is the fact that the Iranians now are talking about opening an oil market, and where they will market their oil, but they're going to insist on being paid not in dollars, but in euros. And that's exactly what Saddam Hussein was doing back in 2001. It was said that he was going to open a special Iraqi oil market and sell his oil only in euros. And you know what happened to Saddam Hussein? It's interesting that the common rumor over in Israel today is if by March of next year the Iranian situation as far as their threat to build nuclear weapons has not been resolved, and they continue building their facilities where they can enrich plutonium, that Israel is going to strike Iran. Now, whether it's going to happen or not, I don't know, but it is interesting that by March, why, this is when the Iranians are going to open up their market and begin selling their oil in euros, which threatens the survival of the American dollar. What do you think the United States is going to do if the reserve status of our currency is really threatened? What are your thoughts on that, Cal?
Well, again, what's going on around the world, most of the countries in the world now, even third world countries, have rejected our dollar, and when they send their goods over here, they're demanding that we convert our dollars into euro and pay them. So that's what's going on right now, but again, our government is not telling us that, because if the public knew that, they could, and probably would, panic and do something about it.
Well, the thing is that people in other countries are beginning to lose confidence in the American dollar. We know that that Warren Buffett has. In fact, he has moved a great deal of money offshore, and he's actively been on the commodity market shorting the American dollar. He lost $300 million last year shorting the dollar, and my understanding is he's still shorting the American dollar. Of course, he shorted it when it was going up. That was a mistake. But then, of course, he's entitled to making an occasional mistake. But I think through the years, he's been right more times than not, and he is still very, very pessimistic on the stability of the American dollar. And if the dollar falls, that means that everything we buy goes up in value, and then it's going to cost us more and more. And, you know, you're working, but you're not going to be able to increase your income. And if you can't increase your income and prices go up, why, you're in real trouble. So what do you learn from the people you're talking to? Because I know you talk to people all across the country, Cal.
I do. Very, very interesting. Of course, this has been my favorite job ever. I've done a lot of different things, including teaching school and professional painting. I'm an author, copy editor, handyman, build furniture. I've done a lot of things, but what I enjoy the most is talking to people about you know, their finances and about the economy, about the condition of the world, and you know what's up ahead. The big story right now is that gold has been climbing dramatically, and it's just very, very frightening to see. And I'm glad that you know it came back down. That is, gold went up to $544 an ounce. That was about 2 weeks ago. Silver hit $9.17, and of course, this should be headlines in the paper, but you can't even find a reference to gold anywhere. Well, there was one in the Wall Street Journal. It was in such small print that you almost need a magnifying glass to see what the price of gold is. But this should be the biggest story. And if this country is so, Wall Street is so concerned about, you know, investing, they should be talking about what gold has done. In fact, in just some simple percentages. In August of 1999, gold was $252 an ounce. Today, gold finished at $504 an ounce. That's a 100% increase in less than 6 years. Silver was $4.35 in June of 1999, and it got up to $9.17.
Now, yeah, but it closed today. What did it close today? About 8.50 or something like that?
8.55.
Right.
So that's up 97% on today's gold. So I'm even, which I've never done before, it's kind of drastic for me, but just seeing this, seeing the gold and silver rise this way, and of course the dollar is falling, everything else is collapsing, I'm telling people now, not only should you put some discretionary money into gold and silver and sit on it, but why not buy gold and silver as an investment? If you want to make some money, that's the place to do it right now. This is the place to do it. You're buying gold and silver, and then if your gold spikes up another $1,500, sell some. You're going to make a lot of money. You can turn around and buy whatever you want at that point. Again, keep your core position in gold and silver. Don't ever sell that. But if you want to buy some gold, to make some money on it, you can't go wrong. Gold's just going to keep climbing from now on.
Well, I think there's no instance in all history where a nation has gone into a fiat money system and that system has not collapsed. We've been able, certainly for almost 50 years, to have the predominant currency, and following the Second World War, why America really took the leadership as far as finances was concerned, and certainly after the Bretton Woods Agreement, and that was, what, about 1944, 1945, and of course at that time, while currencies became convertible into dollars, and the dollars was convertible into gold for everyone in the world except American citizens. And then, of course, in August of 1971, why Richard Nixon took the world off the gold standard. And within 9 years, by 1980, why gold was pushing $1,000 an ounce, was what, $850, $900 an ounce. I think the future contracts got to $1,000. And silver was over $50 an ounce. And then, of course, they came in, that Paul Volcker did what he had to do. He raised the interest rates up to 21 or 22% to stop the inflation. Managed to get the value of the dollar back to something fairly stable. And, of course, we started a gradual increase in during the early years of the Reagan administration. They called it the Reagan recession. Had nothing to do with Ronald Reagan. Actually, Ronald Reagan, by lowering the tax rates, got the economy going, and things really did pretty well for a few years until about 1986, when we got the biggest tax increase in all recorded history, and they took all the deductions away from the people that have been used to fuel our economy for such a long period of time. And, of course, since that time, while we've had this steady and progressive degradation of the dollar, and instead of letting the economy cool down and getting back to a stable situation, we've just kept inflating and inflating and inflating till now nobody knows how many dollars there are out there in circulation all throughout the world. And until very recently, people all throughout the world would rather have the dollar than their own currency. But that attitude is changing even in Russia today, where at one time the American dollar was the most sought-after currency because certainly its value seemed to be holding. But that doesn't seem to be the case so much anymore. Well, we're going to be back here in just a few minutes. If you'd like to call in and talk to Cal, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I should mention that Cal does help Radio Liberty and helps us to expand our listening audience. As you know, we're heard on over 50 stations and another 10 outlets every single week as we try to get people to understand that we're living in very uncertain times. We're living in certain times, very uncertain times, from a financial point of view, from a military point of view, because countries all throughout the world are arming for the coming war. And we're living in very difficult times spiritually, because there is truly today a conspiracy against God. Well, Cal, why don't you go ahead and pick up the story?
Well, again, I was talking about how gold and silver have been rising so dramatically, and there's a number of factors, of course, the basic essentials are still in place. and all they're going to do is, you know, come to fruition as we see the, you know, the months and years, you know, come on. But the worldwide production of gold is the lowest it's been since 1931, for a number of reasons. You know, for many years there, from 1998 through like 2003, gold mines were closing down around the world because the basic cost to get 1 ounce of gold out of the ground is $320 an ounce. And for many years, gold was 260, 270, 280, 290. It was just not feasible or profitable for gold mines to mine gold. So many of them shut down. And to start a gold mine, to begin one, you need about $500,000 worth of capital. It takes anywhere from 8 to 10 years doing exploration and borings and things like that. And so it's a huge investment. Countries like Indonesia have just stopped the gold mining because it's destroyed the ecoculture, strip mining. So there's a lot of factors contributing to that. Even though there's no shortage of gold in the world, it's a controlled substance just like diamonds or anything else. But nevertheless, worldwide production is the lowest it's been since 31. But now worldwide demand is the greatest in history, greatest it's ever been anywhere. And then 2 years ago, China opened its doors for the public to buy gold. And as I mentioned before, China and India currently are buying 80% of the gold that comes out of the ground. And so there's hardly any left for anything else. Now the central banks announced about a month ago that they were divesting themselves of currency speculation. They were putting that money into physical metal, physical gold. The German central bank announced about a week ago that it was no longer going to sell any more gold to anyone. So that really tells you something, and these things should be in headlines rather than, you know, never appearing at all. So those of us who know these things should look at what we have and ask, you know, I ask people, what are you doing to preserve your wealth? And who controls your wealth? Most people think, well, I've got quite a bit of wealth either in the stock market or the banks or money markets, annuities. But that's not wealth. That's a number on a computer chip. In order to realize your wealth, you have to convert it into something tangible, and you have to have it in your possession. Whether it's food or gold or silver or medical supplies or a piece of land or a house, that's tangible, something that you can live in or possess. And so people are still asleep in this country. I was talking to my main supplier today, my gold silver supplier. And of course, the rest of the world is fleeing into gold. That's why gold is climbing the way it is. The Americans are still asleep. And he said, once Americans start buying gold, it'll be all over in a few days. There'll be no gold left anywhere.
Well, you know, I think it's really very interesting that you comment that the German central bank says it's not going to sell any more gold. What has kept the price of gold down for such a long period of time has been a conscious effort on the part of the central banks to maintain a low gold price so that people would be pessimistic about gold and so that they really would have nothing to exchange other than the fiat currencies created by the central banks of the world, and we'll be right here. Well, this is Arthur Stan, and we were just talking about what the central banks throughout the world are doing, and the central banks for years have manipulated the price of gold. Now, it's illegal to manipulate a commodity because they say that gold is no longer monetary metal. Gold is just a commodity. But they don't believe that. Why then do you think the central banks of the world have been hanging on to large amounts of gold? And then they've played various games. They've been selling gold in large amounts to drive the price down, but usually it's either brought back by the same central bank or bought by a different central bank. And then many of the central banks have been loaning their gold out to others to sell on the markets to drive the prices down. But recently, of course, they have stopped doing that, and the Cal had commented that the German central bank had stopped selling gold. And when the central banks stop selling gold, and especially if they demand that the gold that's been borrowed from them to manipulate the gold market be returned, why, I think they're going to find an awful lot of people rummaging around very rapidly to try to put their hands on gold to repay the gold debts that they borrowed. And that old adage, you know, he who sells what isn't his and has to give it back or go to prison. And you certainly don't want to play games with the central banks of the world. And if you borrowed money from them, you better, or gold from them, you better be ready to pay it back or to return it. And I really believe that we are on the verge of a major move in all the precious metals, because I think they're losing control of the world monetary system. And when that happens, of course, it's going to have a profound impact on the majority of the people who have their money in bonds. And we're told, oh, you want a safe investment, you want to be in bonds. Well, it was Ludwig von Mises, who was the greatest economist of the 20th century, said, bonds are guaranteed certificates of confiscation of the wealth. And he would put that same into so many of the things that are in dollar incremented things. Certainly if you have a defined benefit pension fund, they're going to pay you so many dollars a year for the rest of your life, or an annuity where you get so many dollars a year for the rest of your life. But what's the dollar worth? I mean, because it's what the dollar is worth, not the number of dollars that you're going to have. And what will it actually buy 5 years from now, 10 years from now? What will it buy a year from now? And if we go into an inflationary spiral, as I think is very possible, there are going to be an awful lot of people who never did their homework, who suddenly finally will live their twilight years in poverty. So basically, Cal is saying that he's talking to people around the country who are increasingly aware of what's going on. Go ahead, Cal.
And a lot of people are, I mean, but it's a vast minority, just like the people who listen to you on the radio. I mean, there are a lot of people out there, but it's in the vast minority. So the masses are still asleep, and the remnant will always, you know, be the ones that are awakened and do something about it, but it'll be a vast minority. But it's a key time in history right now, and I really, really fully believe that if people get into gold and silver right now, not only for preserving wealth and to have something to barter with, which is the main reason, but, you know, this is just the beginning of gold rising at $500 an ounce, just the beginning. In fact, one analyst that I talked to just a few days ago, he saw gold at 734. That was the number he just gave me, 734, and didn't give a time. But the way gold has been jumping, years and years ago, I talked to several gold analysts, and they said gold is under so much pressure, and it's been kept down for so long by the bankers. So when it does finally take off, it's going to jump $25, $50 at a time, and no one's going to be able to stop it. The concerning thing for me is that when this starts, a panic will also start. Americans will buy gold, and like I said, the supply will be gone in just a couple of days. In fact, you've heard the statistic, no doubt, and I'm sure you've quoted it, that if even one half of a percent of all the money in the stock market were to go into gold, the supply would be gone in 2 days.
Well,
that's what's scary.
Well, I really believe that the people over in India are accumulating gold. I know the people in China are accumulating gold. I know that the people in Japan are accumulating gold because they can't get that much on putting their money in the bank. They want to be in something that will maintain its currency. The people of Japan got into the same sort of a situation we are, where the stock market had hit 40,000. And, of course, they were talking about it going to 100,000. Things were great, and they were only going to get better. And then came the day of reckoning, and their market collapsed, and this would be 1990 or 1991. And 15 years later, they are still, the value of property is still going down, the value of things are still going down. They've never been able to get the economy going again. They got into a severe deflation. Why? Because they had massive inflation. They had more value in the property in the city of Tokyo than there was for property in all of the United States. But it was all make-believe. We live in a make-believe world. And the day of reckoning came into Japan. I fear it's coming to the United States. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Cal Grunwald. We're simply talking about what's happening financially to the United States. And if we can do nothing else, we can sound the clarion call for those people who will listen. And I'm not suggesting anybody is going to get rich in the metals, although they certainly might. But what you really want to do is preserve what wealth you have. We work hard, and most people work very hard for what they have. Well, I'll tell you what the smart people are doing. I'll tell you what Warren Buffett did. He bought 120 million ounces of silver a few years ago, and as far as we know, he has the majority of that still stashed away. We know that George Soros and Bill Gates and other people who've accumulated a great deal of money are getting their money out of the United States and into things that are tangible, because they understand what's going on. The great tragedy is the average American does not, and the purpose of the media is not to inform the people or to reveal what's going on. The purpose of the newspapers and magazines and television and radio is to conceal what's going on, so that the vast majority of people, when this crash comes, and it's going to come, it's only a matter of time, they will be left, of course, with no possibility of ever regaining the wealth they've lost. We're facing an energy crisis. We're facing a pension crisis. We're facing an industrial crisis. We're facing another war. And, of course, all of these things come together into what's been referred to as the perfect financial storm, and I see really no way out of it. How about you, Cal?
Well, you paint the same picture I do, and you do a better job than I do. But that's why I recommend people, get my paper. I've got a 26-page paper on entitled Gold and How to Avoid the Scams in the Coin Industry. It's a unique paper. I'm not bragging about it because I never intended to write it in the first place, but being in the gold business, I worked my first 6 years for two of the largest coin companies in the country, and there I saw all these horrible scams. Brokers around me were misrepresenting product and lying to people and putting them into the wrong coins for the wrong reasons, and the management was going right along with it, and it was just horrifying. And I started writing a paper about it, and it got up to 26 pages, and it's not just about the scams in the coin industry. It's practical things like who should buy gold and who should buy silver, and what is the purpose of gold and silver, and why should you have them, where should you hide them, where shouldn't you hide them, how to know a coin company, whether their intentions toward you are good or bad.
Hold that thought right there, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Cal Grunwald. And Cal, before we go on, I want you to get your address, your telephone number out, and how people can get in touch with you, and then how they can get your 26-page summary analysis of the scams in the coin business. How can they get in touch with you and get the material that you'll offer them, especially some of those the newspaper clippings about what happened back in the 30s when they nationalized gold? Why don't you tell our listeners?
Yes, my phone number is 414-234-8267. That's 414-234-8267. And those articles that Dr. Stan was referring to were articles from the 1933 New York Times when Roosevelt confiscated gold and tells about how he declared a two-day banking holiday. He set in place 14 new banking rules. The second one in the list, which you'll see if you want my packet, is that they opened all safety deposit boxes and they helped themselves whatever they wanted there. So you can never trust a banker, and there's some very other interesting articles here about how the bankers shipped all their commodity gold coins overseas before the confiscation. One of them waited too late and was intercepted. All the gold on the boat was going to Paris. Just fascinating articles from the past, and of course these are the coins of our history. The $10, $20 liberties of St. Gaudens that were on these boats. Not only that, but bullion bars and blocks and ingots. So it's a very, very interesting set of articles. There's also an article called the Emergency Banking Order, which was drafted in 1961 by Robert Anderson, who was the Secretary of the Treasury. It basically allows the banks, with the government's command, to shut their doors at any time, just like they did in Argentina, and then whatever is behind those doors is the banks, and whatever is in your hand is yours. So I tell people it's time that you have to be in control and in possession of your own wealth in tangible form. And with all these pension funds drying up and all the uncertainty out there.
Okay, fine. Well, let's go to Roger. Let's go to Roger, who's calling from Georgia. Hi, Roger. How are you doing?
Real good. Interesting show tonight. Thanks for taking my call. You know, as I listen to the Cal talk about the price of gold and how it's being manipulated and things, there's a different perspective that I like to kind of go into once in a while when I hear this stuff, and it kind of helps, I think, once in a while to kind of turn people's heads kind of more in tune with what's happening with gold. You know, gold really isn't changing price. What's happening is the value of the dollar is what's changing. Gold is the constant. So when we're, in a way, we're kind of doing a disservice to gold by saying that the Fed or whoever is fiddling with the price of gold, because it makes you, somehow or another, this gold is worth more or worth less, because we're comparing it to how many dollars, you know, and we're buying this gold to preserve the wealth, which is expressed in dollars, like, you know, paper money.
Well, I think that the one thing, Roger, is the price is artificially controlled, because they do not want the price to go up so that there will be anything comparable to the true value of the gold, because they want to force us to use their fiat money system. And of course, as long as we do that, and they can create money out of absolutely nothing, and they can monetize anything they want to, then of course we are constantly being cheated. People have to understand that gold is the only real store of wealth. That's what Alan Greenspan said in his essay back in 1965, and it's as true today as it was when he said it. So you're absolutely right. Gold is the constant. But it is being constantly manipulated. And if it were really worth what it should be, it would be well over $1,000, probably $1,500 an ounce at the present time.
Right. But what I'm saying is that you can't manipulate a constant. What they're manipulating is the money system around it.
You're absolutely right. Okay, and you're right. No question at all. But everything is being manipulated. But what we need to do is let people understand that. And, of course, the ultimate purpose is to rob people of the value of their savings.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, anything else you'd like to say?
No, I just thought that would be a different way of looking at things when we talk about the comparison of the dollar and gold.
I mean, it used to be during the Great Depression, you could hire a man to work all day long for $1. That was when the dollar was valued in gold. What does it cost you today to get a man, you know, a skilled craftsman to work all day long?
Yeah.
Get that.
Yeah.
Okay, yep. God bless you. And thanks so much for calling. And what part of Georgia do you live in?
Right in the middle, in Macon.
Okay, fine. Well, you get all those people in Macon listening to our program. Thanks for calling.
Betcha.
God
Thank
bless.
You.
Let's go to Jim calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Dr. Stan. Hi, Cal.
How are you doing?
Good. I just wanted to ask you a question about the stock market and to get your opinion. You know, I interpret the value of the stock market as a measure of the profits that have been made from the export of American industry, and that's why it looks so good. What do you think about that?
Well, that's a very interesting observation. And you're probably right. Of course, the stock market is totally manipulated, and It is so artificial, you know, that the government can any time prop it up or drop it, just depending upon, you know, the money they put in, they buy securities or T-bills through brokerage firms.
But I think, Jim, the point that you're making is the fact that many of our corporations that have moved overseas have made excellent profits. And so if you look at the price-earning ratio on those major corporations that are, say, operating in China today, they're making a lot of money. And their corporate profits are excellent. People here in the United States are not making, most of them are not making profits like that. A few are, but the vast majority are not. So
yeah,
you're absolutely right. It is because, you know, we have done everything we could to encourage our our industries to move overseas to produce their goods there that some of the corporations have done very well. But these corporations are no longer American corporations. They are international corporations, and they're part of this whole world globalist movement that's aimed upon the impoverishment of the American people. And we've got a long way to go, but it's only a matter of a relatively few years before we progressively lower the standards of living here in America, raise the standards of living in India and in China, and then we'll all live happily, equally impoverished.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've noticed that the value of the stock market over the last, 20 years or so, seems to parallel with the rise of the trade deficit.
Right.
So I have to think that a lot of these companies are profiting from their move overseas, and then they're dumping all this cheap stuff back in the United States, and the tariffs have been removed, and they're profiting from the trade deficit and the bankrupting and indebting, of the United States. So that's what I've come to see in interpreting the stock market over the years. So anyway.
Okay, fine. Hey, it's good to hear from you, and thank you very much for your help. We appreciated what you sent in the other day.
Oh, okay.
Good night. Sure. God bless. Well, our telephone number, again, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. If you have a guest for our guest this evening, a question for our guest this evening, Cal Gwynval, and we've simply been talking about what's going on here in the United States economically. And, although the stock market is really doing very well, it's being totally manipulated, they have something called the Plunge Protection Team, which is creating the perception of health of the stock market. If it were really based upon price-earnings ratio, why, many of our stocks would be much lower than they are today. In fact, for people who do not know, the value of General Motors bonds and Ford Motor Company bonds have been reduced to junk value. By the people who grade bonds, that means they have no real value at all. And the people who invest in them are just hoping and praying they're going to get paid off, but they have no real claim upon the corporations. Junk bonds, of course, were a very excellent means by which companies could raise money in the past, and in an upswing in a good economy, most of the bondholders got paid off. But when you're holding junk bonds, it's sort of like putting your finger on mercury. It sort of moves to the side. You'd never have any stability. And I really fear that this is increasingly going to happen in America as more and more of our major American corporations are going to be facing exactly the same crisis situation that faces our major automotive concerns today. Now, Toyota is doing fine, and the reason they're doing that is they do not have a tremendous number of older people that they have to pay pensions for and health care, and besides that, they're in a part of the country where actually the labor costs are somewhat considerably less than they are up in Michigan. But the major thing is they do not have this tremendous burden of retired people that they're paying health care for. It was estimated that last year General Motors put out over $5.3 billion just for health care costs. We've got Ron calling from Richland. I guess that's Richland, Washington. So if Ari will go ahead and screen Ron through, I will take his call. Ari, can you screen Ron through to us? Well, he probably will in just a minute. We'll wait. Cal, do you have any thoughts on what I just said?
Well, again, your analysis is excellent. I wanted to talk a little bit, if I could, about the importance. There's a lot of people out there that don't have, a lot of money to put into gold and silver, but silver is so important. And again, it's not about making money. The multiplier on silver is going to be anywhere from 7 to 11 times.
By 7 to 11 times the value of gold is what you're talking about.
Well, no, itself.
Okay, go ahead.
Silver is $8.55 right now. If you multiply that 7 times, you're at $56 or $58 an ounce. So silver will get at least that high, possibly $75 to $100 an ounce. So just by getting into silver with a little bit of money, first of all, you're going to have something to preserve your wealth, and you're going to have something to barter with. With the junk silver, the 90%, those are the dimes, quarters, and half dollars were legal tender up till 1964. It's a very, very practical way of looking at barter. because you're going to have something that you can buy a loaf of bread with or a dozen eggs, and junk silver is a good, very, very good match for that. And beyond that, what you want to preserve, you know, as far as your wealth, you know, put that into gold coins. Now, the key to that is you have to see, you know, you have to ask yourself the question, you know, where is my wealth right now? Is it in the stock market? Is it in the bank? Do I have control of it? People, you know, and people who get inheritances, for instance, or the person that you were just talking about who, you know, sold his house and then bought all kinds of, you know, bought a couple of duplexes and a couple of houses. I mean, real estate is fine, but it's not liquid. It's not liquid. In fact, in 1929, when the market crashed, real estate values plummeted 75% to 95%. Not that they're going to do it at this time, although they could. We don't know. No one's got a crystal ball. So people have to look down the road and say, you know, I've got to do something to preserve what I have. And, you know, gold and silver are probably the best and most compact store of value that you can ever find. And what I'm going to do now is it's kind of a special.
Probably better not to do a special on this program, if you don't mind.
Well, okay, that's right.
Okay, let's go to Ron, who's calling in from Washington. Hi, Ron. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I had a question for Cal.
Go ahead.
That's a couple of them. First, about gold-backed currencies. I know the dollar's not backed by gold, but are there any currencies in the world that are backed by gold?
Well, yes. The euro is 15%, 1-5, 15% backed by gold. The Swiss franc has got 100% backing. I mean, it's very, very strong. But if you're thinking about speculating with currencies?
Well, no, I wouldn't. I was just curious about something like that.
Yes.
What about say international stocks? If the dollar's going down, it seems like their relative value would go up.
Well, yes, if they're based on the euro. Although the world economy is not in good shape either. And basically, when you invest in a stock, it's still a piece of paper with a number on it, and it's not in your hand. I mean, if it's in your hand, it's still a piece of paper. So even gold stocks, people think they're a hedge against inflation, but they're not. They're a stock in gold, which is good, and gold is rising. But when everything collapses, you're still looking at a piece of paper with a number on it. It doesn't have any intrinsic value there.
Ron, the Indian market did very, very well this last year, but heaven only knows what's going to happen. And remember, the economy of the entire world is dependent upon the stability of the American purchasing. We are purchasing about 80% of all the things that are bought in the world right here in the United States. And as long as we're buying and the American people are going further and further into debt, then we are keeping the economies of the rest of the world going. But all of them, of course, are dependent upon purchases from this country to maintain their economies. And if anything happens to the American economy, why, hang on to your hat, no matter where you are, whether it be here in the United States and throughout the rest of the world. So what was a good buy last year may not be as good buy this coming year. You're just going to have to wait and see.
Well, so a question, say you purchase gold and it goes up, where do you sell it?
Well, my company is called the Gold and Silver Exchange, so I do that all the time. If you want to sell it back to me, that's good. But I don't advocate that unless it's an emergency, because you're buying gold and silver to have something there of tremendous value when the currency collapses, so that you can survive, you and your family and your loved ones. So you don't want to sell it back. The reason you buy gold and silver in the first place is because you didn't trust the dollar. The dollar you saw was falling. Becoming shakier all the time, so you took some of your paper money or your dollars, converted it into real money, silver, gold and silver, and then you have it in your possession. So I tell people not to be tempted to buy, or excuse me, sell your gold and silver when they rise dramatically.
And I think, Ron, the thing is that you can sell gold anywhere in the world. You can always find somebody to buy it. It has been the medium of exchange for at least for 4 or 5,000 years.
But you don't suggest keeping it in a safe deposit box in a bank or something?
No. That's the worst place, because the bankers, you know, bankers are crooks. And that's what Roosevelt did in 1933. He closed the bank doors for 2 days, then all the banks, they opened all the safety deposit boxes, they took all the gold out, precious stones, you know, whatever they wanted to, they just pilfered the safety deposit boxes. In fact, in the last 3 years, I've talked to 4 different individuals who have had things taken out of their safety deposit boxes in banks today.
Does that answer your question, Ron?
Yeah, it's a terrible thing with the crooks run the government. Thanks, Dr.
Curious.
Stan. Thanks, Cal.
God bless. Bye-bye.
All right, very
okay,
good.
Fine. Well, that was Ron calling from Richland, Washington. Cal, let's get your telephone number off one more time.
It's 414-234-8267.
One more time.
Yeah, 414-234-8267.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Cal Grunwald, and Cal has simply been talking, and we've been talking about really what's happening economically. We live in very uncertain times, certainly far more uncertain times than any I can remember. As I look around the world, I see countries arming for war. Israel has three submarines. They're getting another couple of submarines from Germany. Why is Israel investing in so many submarines? We find Iran buying $1 billion worth of anti-aircraft batteries from Russia. Why is Iran buying anti-aircraft batteries? We find Russia and China and the United States are certainly, I think to a lesser extent, Great Britain, exporting military equipment throughout the world. Hugo Chavez in Central America is buying a large number of fighter planes from Russia. Why is he getting fighter planes? Well, because I believe everybody anticipates we're on the edge of a whole series of new wars. What are your thoughts on that, Cal? Have you been sensing that at all, that it seems like the world once again is moving towards war?
Well, absolutely. It's just like a boiling cauldron. When Bush went into Iraq, you know, to grab the oil, in the process, he killed thousands and thousands of innocent people in Iraq. Of course, the Muslim world, being 1.5 billion strong, is incensed like a whole nest of hornets. You know, and their whole intent is to kill Americans and take their property. I mean, it's never going to end. The hatred is there. Now, you know, Germany and France have started building armaments, you know, to come against the United States when they get strong enough. And 2006 is supposed to be the year of World War III. When they get enough strength, military strength, to come against the United States, Russia and China will join them. And we simply don't have a chance. That's the scary part. We don't have a chance. Our military is way down. We're spread thin around the whole world. You know, the New World Order people have seen to that. So they weakened us economically, and now they've weakened us militarily, and we're extremely vulnerable.
I would recommend any of our listeners out there get hold of Congressman Murtha's speech. It was on the 17th of November. Read it through, and you'll find that Congressman Murtha, who retired as a Marine Corps colonel, said, "Our army is broken. I mean, our equipment is broken." And he's very, very concerned about the stability of our nation. In fact, he said, "Our nation is in danger today." That's Congressman Murtha's speech on the 17th of November. You can get it off his website or get it off the Internet. Cal, we're out of time. The hour's flown by. God bless you. Thanks very much, and we'll be talking to you again next month.
Thank you, next year.
Good night. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when we have to mention that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs primarily to help us as we reach out across America every week on at least 50 different stations, and then another 10 outlets as shortwave and internet and satellite. So we have a pretty good outreach across America. I would mention we are on Telstar 5 now, and if you want to hear Radio Liberty in 9 hours a day, why, of course, you can pull it down, and you'll hear Joyce Riley and Chuck Chrismeyer and Pastor Butz Paul. 24 hours a day of conservative Christian programming, bringing you the information you're not going to get from ABC, CBS, and NBC, and far different than what you get off of satellite radio from from Howard Stern. Of course, we're there so that other stations can pull us down, but you can pull us down, too, with very inexpensive equipment. If you'd like to know more, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, and we'll put you in touch with the people who can actually help you to get, you know, this satellite equipment so you can listen 24 hours a day, not only, of course, to our programming, but you can watch Kristen video, and certainly Trinity is up there, Daystar, Kristen Network is up there, Armed Forces Network is up there, even Al Jazeera is up there. You can listen to their hate material, which is being broadcast on an American satellite, to inflame the passions of the Muslims in the United States. Why do you think we're allowing that, an American satellite, to carry the propaganda arm of Al-Qaeda? Why is that happening? Well, there are a lot of unanswered questions out there. We're living in very, very difficult times. We do hope that many of you will go to our website at www.radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, where you can listen to our programs directly or indirectly 5 hours a day on the Internet. And certainly then you can hear our archive programs there. Our programs will be available in MP3 starting next week. If you go to the Soundwave outlet, then Soundwave are the ones that carry our Internet programs, so you'll be able to pull down our MP3 programs there, as they say, a week next week, and hopefully you can get those on your iPods and get other people to start listening to our programs. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you out there will tell others about our programs. If you're listening on the Here's Help Radio Network, this program is rebroadcast at 3 o'clock every weekday afternoon, and then on Saturday morning at 12:30. Your job out there is to tell others about our program and explain that they're going to get news here that they won't get elsewhere. If you'd like a free copy of one of our newsletters, perhaps you'd like to understand what's really going on in Iraq. And nothing that you are being told through the regular media is true. Iraq is serving as a great diversion on one hand to keep our attention off the fact that we're losing our freedom here at home, and also, of course, as a stepping stone into World War III. And, of course, if you'd like to get my newsletter, the Deja Vu in Iraq, just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'll send you a free copy. If you'd like to understand the oil crisis, call us at 1-800-544-8927 and ask for Peak Oil 2. Now, if you have in the Internet, you can pull these newsletters down off the Internet, but we'll be glad to send you a free copy. And then we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection, because we are truly involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. Well, this is Dr. Stan at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story for Behind the Story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line Arthur Bernkow from American Veterans for Constitutional Law. And Arthur, of course, works with veterans who are really being deprived of their rights by the Veterans Administration. You know, when, of course, men are going off to fight for our country, they're great heroes, and they're lauded and applauded, the men who risk their lives for our liberty here at home. But when they come home, many times with broken bodies or broken minds, and they try to get the benefits that have been promised to them by the Veterans Administration, suddenly everything changes. And suddenly it's almost like, we had no idea who you are. Well, we'll put you on the list. We'll have a hearing for you. But, well, of course, very, very few people will get their disability. We'll put it off. We'll delay it. Last thing I heard, there were several hundred thousand veterans trying to get compensation for veterans' disabilities. And remember, these are left over from the first Gulf War. We know that certainly the government will admit at least 100,000 to 150,000 or more veterans with on disability from Gulf War illness, and they're probably a great deal more than that. I don't know what the latest count on them is. Arthur, do you have any idea how many have actually been given disability from the first Gulf War?
Yes, over 300,000.
All right, fine. Well, there are an awful lot of veterans trying to get disability, and they just go through these hearings that are designed not to reveal what their disability is, but to repress any recognition of it, is because they don't want to pay them their benefits. And the Veterans Administration plays games with the veterans. And, of course, they actually reward employees of the Veterans Administration for withholding payment of benefits. But the average person doesn't understand that, and the average man who goes off to fight for freedom doesn't understand that there are wicked people working at the Veterans Administration here at home. So, well, that is the background, Arthur. You pick up the story.
Okay, well, it's not only the Gulf War, but we're going back to the war in Vietnam, the war in Korea, the war in Europe and the Pacific and World War II, and we're going back to veterans who have been walking the corridors of time for 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years or more, trying to get paid for injuries that they've received in the service in a line of duty, and denied by a predatory agency, the Veterans Administration. And we can go back years and years. Like, we just won a case recently for somebody who was denied for 60 years. And it's really an incredible, and we won the case with this gentleman. We got the case from, he called into a radio program, which I was a guest on, and from that point we started working his case for him about 4 years ago, and he has just won his case. And he was discharged from the service in 1945.
And I think the thing is, they really want people to die off, then they don't have to pay them the benefits or pay any benefits to their families. And unfortunately, you're dealing with a heartless bureaucracy that has no compassion and certainly no respect for the men who risked their lives for our country.
Well, you know,
hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Arthur Bernkow. Arthur, pick the story up.
Okay, when you view this from the sidelines, it seems like an impossible task. But I'm Arthur Bernkow. I'm an activist. I'm the executive director of Veterans for Constitutional Law. And I'm determined to make this mission impossible into a reality. I'm a former serviceman who, when he served in the service, took a delight in Walking Point. Now, Walking Point, this is the man who probes the enemy, and this is the man who draws the fire from the enemy, but he's also the first to return the fire. And this is the job that I relished when I was in a service, was Walking Point. I was a volunteer almost each and every day when I was in a service, and Walking Point was my passion. And pretty much what I'm doing with the Veterans Administration, well, against the Veterans Administration, is Walking Point and drawing the fire. Now, I would like to restore the Veterans Administration to what I view as its original intent, as being an organization whose purpose is to assist the veteran in need and be a benefactor for those who serve their country. And this is far from being the case now. What started out as an idea of nobility and respect established by a grateful nation, he said, became the veteran's worst antagonist and the most relentless adversary. It started out to be a great idea, but it has become the veteran's worst antagonist and the most relentless adversary. And I'm charging that extremely predatory laws have been passed which denied veterans the right to take any of their grievances with the VA into civilian courts, and even denied these veterans the right to have attorneys of their own choosing. Now, I further charge that Congress erred in its creation of the National Veterans Service Organizations, and I'm charging that by granting these groups free office space, utilities, and equipment at the discretion of the Veterans Administration Secretary, Congress in reality created extensions of the agency's power. Organizations such as the Veterans of Foreign Wars, the American Legion, the Military Order of the Purple Heart, the Disabled American Veterans, and about 40 other service organizations were charged with being veterans advocates. Instead, they became servants to this huge government handout of everything from their offices to computers and pencils. Today, they seldom, if ever, take any position opposed by the VA. Instead, the service organizations, they quote any request for action outside the scope of VA control.
Oh, that's not right.
Wild and unobjectionable.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Arthur Byrne-Cowan, and Arthur is expressing his concern that many of the mainline veterans organizations, Veterans of Foreign Wars and the American Legion and others, actually are given places where they can have their offices and telephones and all sorts of equipment and benefits for the federal government. And, of course, although there is no written policy that they will be subservient to government, the old adage that he who pays the piper calls the tune seems to carry over here, because so often these organizations will not intervene strongly on the part of the veterans who's being deprived of his rightful veterans benefits by the government bureaucracy that is providing the benefits for the veterans organization. So we've got a real problem. Somebody's got to be on the front lines helping the veterans, because when you come up against the government and you're disabled and you've got to support yourself and your family, and they withhold your pension, what are you going to do about it?
Back over a barrel, Dr.
Right, so go ahead.
Well, when a congressional attempt was made to bring VA decisions under judicial review of civilian courts, agency administrators worked overtime to make sure the National Veterans Service Organizations testified against this pro-veteran legislation. And the pinnacle of corrupt action was when Gail A. Gumpf, that's G-O-M-P-H, that's the Intergovernmental Affairs Director of the Veterans Administration, sent an intimidating letter to all of the organizations reminding them of their status and urging the judicial review bill, which at that time was called H.S. 585, be defeated. This bill, which would have ended agency arrogance and unchallenged denial of veterans' claims, never became law. And since the receipt of that VA letter, all of these organizations have understood the ground rules for being dispensed their government largesse, their free government largesse. They have never disagreed with the Veterans Administration again. And Veterans for Constitutional Law and myself, I'm its executive director, we feel that a major house cleaning is in order because huge bonuses of up to $30,000 a year are given to VA managers and directors for saving the government money by denying veterans claims. And that bounty practice must also be stopped. The practice of being a veteran's adversary must also end. What I claim is a kangaroo court, the Court of Veterans Appeals, also must be eliminated and claims be moved into civil courts.
Now, of course, I think it's important that people understand that when you have a court that is set up by the Veterans Administration to determine whether the Veterans Administration will pay the benefits or not, do you honestly think that you are going to get a fair trial? You do not have judges who are impartial. You have judges who are the payroll of the Veterans Administration. And what Arthur's saying is,
exactly.
Look, what we need is to have this taken into courts where the judges are not subservient and dependent upon their income from the Veterans Administration. Do you honestly think that a judge who's paid by the Veterans Administration is going to come up with an opinion opposed to the Veterans Administration? Pick up the story there.
Well, you know, they claim they're an independent court, but they're anything but independent. In fact, the man who was the chief judge, Donald Ivers, testified in front of both houses of Congress that veterans' benefits, in his opinion, are gratuities. They're gifts. And appointing Donald Ivers as the chief judge of this court is tantamount to appointing Nero, the fire chief in Rome. So, you know, this is really ludicrous. And just to give you an idea of how this court works, there were 18,000 review cases have been heard before this court. Now, of the 18,000, we have a grand total of 169 actual veteran wins. This is less than 1%. The VA average is a mere 4%, but when you get into this appeal, this is less than 1%. And there are at least 9,000 cases which didn't even receive their preordained examinations by the court. In other words, these 9,000 cases cannot be used by other veterans. The quote from these cases, this court took care of that detail. And finally, we feel that all veterans must concentrate on removing from office members of Congress who attempt to use veterans' issues as targets for their attempts to cut benefit funds, while at the same time buying votes in other sectors with those same dollars. And as I said before, we've got veterans walking the corridors of time, old-timers for 20, 30, 40, 50, and even 60 years. And they've got incontrovertible evidence that their claims are just, but nothing really ever happens. And we say, where does it stop? It's up to us and to the media to end these outrages and put Congress on notice that it's got to end the illegal actions of a 261,000-employee giant which will only process its secret quota, and its secret quota is 4% of veteran claims each year. It's really highway robbery. And speaking of highway robbery, Dr. Stan, by the government, I'm saying Mr. Bush, has selected a new secretary of the VA. He appointed Jim Nicholson. And Jim Nicholson, if any of you have heard me talk about what happened in Chicago and Jim Nicholson's outrageous behavior, him and his inspector general and Admiral Cooper, the head of Mr. Principi's task force, Principi was the former secretary, their behavior at this town hall meeting with 300 veterans and the two senators was outrageous, not to be believed. And the VA took it on the chin because the reports showed that the Chicago, Illinois area, the Illinois area in particular, had the lowest amount of claims allowed, compensation claims, in the last 20 years running, 20 years in a row. Chicago, Illinois ended up dead last on benefits. And a more even outrageous figure is for the last 70 years, if they didn't end up last, they ended up second or third from the bottom. And it's incredible what they've been in Chicago, but the VA was forced, being that the media came out against them. A lady by the name of Cheryl Reed from the Chicago Sun-Times put out this Wounded Warriors series, and that forced this meeting, and the VA was forced to make concessions. They had to add a lot of people to their staff to try to catch up on claims. They had to reopen claims that were 20 and 30 years old, which they had no intention of opening. And the VA is looking for a little payback, a little one-upmanship at this point. And Mr. Nicholson, over the past year, let's say over the past year since they've selected Mr. Nicholson, Mr. Bush has hired him. He's his hired gun, and he's hired for one purpose, to cut benefits.
Now, tell what, who was Mr. Nicholson? What was his position before he was rehired by the Bush administration?
Okay, he had been the chairman of the Republican National Committee and the ambassador to the Vatican, and as one pundit put it, Jim Nicholson can write a good political bumper sticker and knows how to kiss the Pope's ring.
All right, fine. Now, but so now he is now suddenly the head. Is he the head of the Veterans Administration? Is that his new post?
He's the newly appointed head, and the man has no understanding of veterans advocacy and absolutely no experience in the healthcare sector. And the Veterans Hospitals is the largest hospital chain in the whole nation, and this man has no experience in the healthcare sector and no understanding of veterans advocates, and we're trying to arrange demonstrations in front of the central office of the VA in Washington, asking for the removal of Mr. Nicholson, either get him to resign or have the man fired. He's absolutely a total disaster for veterans.
Now, of course, how long has he been in that position?
A little less than a year.
All right, well, now, what has his response been? Has he tried to get things straightened up and working more efficiently, or is he simply going on with business as usual?
Ah, I'm going to tell you the response right now. Over the last year, Secretary Nicholson has turned a deaf ear to veterans, and he's quietly made numerous decisions designed to strip veterans of benefits and compensation. And with Nicholson at the helm of the VA, veterans have come to feel isolated from the agency's decision-making processes, and recent developments have done nothing to quell that uneasy feeling. Earlier this year, veterans were surprised by the VA's second signature required. It's an SSR policy, second signature required. Now, SSR applied to approve claims for many high-dollar disabilities, and it stipulated that the claim be reapproved by another VA staffer. However, if the claim was denied by the first staffer, there was no second review, only on claims that were approved. Veterans groups claimed that a SSR policy should apply to all claims for any conditions, whether they were approved or denied, and that's the way it should be. The fact that the VA chose to apply SSR to disabilities with a high-dollar compensation was proof to many veterans that the agency was just trying to save money by denying benefits.
Now, I'm sorry, you lose me a little bit. What is this SSR, and how does that work?
Okay, it means second signature is required before the man gets any money. So if he was approved to get his disability compensation, they have it go in front of another staff member and make sure the other staff member gives it a review.
All right, fine. And are they really cutting back? In other words, they're just not compensating for it. So even though he's been approved for his disability, he's not going to get it.
Right.
And they're putting another barrier in the way. We're going to be back in just a moment
with
Arthur
Bergtaub.
We're going to be back in just a moment with Arthur Bergtaub and discussing what is happening in the Veterans Administration. All right, Arthur, go ahead and explain it.
If they deny a claim initially, if the claim is denied, they will not ask for a second signature applied to this. In other words, if it's denied, it's denied. They don't want anyone looking it over who says, why did you deny this? this man has a right to get this. So they don't want a second signature if the claim is initially denied. Now, the SSR policy was not announced by the VA, and only some very good investigative work by Cheryl Reed of the Chicago Sun-Times brought the story to light.
And how recently was this story, and how recently has this new policy been put in?
About 3 or 4 months ago.
All right, fine. So this is directly related to Nicholson.
Oh, without a doubt.
All right,
this is Nicholson's brainchild here. And she brought the story to light as just one of many instances where the VA has instituted policies detrimental to veterans without making the actions public. Now, the latest unannounced move by the VA is a new review of post-traumatic stress disorder diagnosis, treatment, and compensation. The VA's plans came to light on November 16th, just 6 days after they had canceled the review of 79,000 PTSD claims awarded at 100% disability, and also TDIU, Total Disability Individual Unemployability. There were 68,000 of those, so we're looking at 147,000 cases he had earmarked for review to try to cut as many of them as possible.
Now, were these the Second World War, Vietnam War, were these Gulf War? Do we know?
Most of them were Gulf War and Vietnam War,
right,
but there was some Korean and World War II people in there.
All right,
there
so
was a number of
they
them.
Were going to review them all. Right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was Mr. Nicholson's brainchild, and we contacted Senator Patty Murray of Washington State, who's on the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, and the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, as well as the House Veterans Affairs Committee, said to Mr. Nicholson, no, you can't do that. You can't earmark 147,000 cases for cuts. And they told Mr. Nicholson in no uncertain terms, he can't do this. So what does Mr. Nicholson do? Okay. The VA's new PTSD review was not announced by the VA. There was no VA press release. There was no VA press conference. The information wasn't even posted on the VA website. Mr. Nicholson decides to take an end run around Congress and deal with an organization called the Veterans Disability Benefit Commission that was formed, supposedly an independent group, but I'll show you how independent they are. The Republican Party appointed 9 of the 13 people. The Democrats appointed 4 of the 13. Now, who did they appoint? They appointed Rick Surratt of the DAV and Butch Jockel, formerly of the DAV, who are anything but veterans advocates. Rick Surratt keeps defending Title 38 laws like 511A.
Now, see, now the average person doesn't know what those laws
are. Okay, I'm going to explain that as I go along. 511A is the law on the Title 38 that prevents a veteran from going into a real court. And 5904 is the law under Title 38 that says a veteran...
Okay. Hold that thought right there for just a moment, please.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I guess this is Arthur Bernthal for Veterans for Constitutional Law. He's just pointing out that they have established an independent commission, the Veterans Administration, an independent commission to evaluate veterans' claims. And, of course, the independent commission was actually set up, apparently, by Congress. And, of course, the people that they put on the commission were not friends of the veterans. They were people who had an agenda. So pick the story up there.
Okay. Just to give you an idea, 5904, as I was trying to explain before, is the rule under Title 38 that says a veteran is not entitled to an attorney until they get a final decision from the Board of Veterans Appeals, and that process takes 7 years. So the veteran has to struggle by for 7 years without an attorney. Mr. Rick Surratt is the one who was promoting that veterans should not have this right, and the other fellow they promoted from the DAV was kicked out of the DAV for using DAV funds to pay for private attorneys because he was a lawsuit was put on him by a female member of the DAV, a sexual harassment suit, and he used DAV money to defend himself, so they tossed him out of the DAV. And this is two of the four Democrats that are on this thing. So it's really quite something. And they also contracted
This is the commission. How many people are on the commission?
13.
13 on there. So certainly there's a question as to the impartiality of these people, whether they will really represent the veterans or whether they will have their own political agenda, and that is to restrict benefits for the veterans. So pick up the story there.
Exactly. They also contracted with the Institute of Medicine on a two-pronged approach to the examination of post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, the VA did not announce anything. They used Senator Craig, that's the new head of the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, as their conduit to hand out the bad news. Since Craig's press releases do not have a high readership, the information has gone virtually unnoticed. Upon reading Senator Craig's press release, I called the public affairs office at the VA. They had no knowledge of the review. I called the Institute of Medicine. They had no knowledge of the review. Now, Senator Craig's office was a little more helpful. They forwarded the two documents the VA had sent to them. One document is a fact sheet detailing the contract between the VA and the Institute of Medicine. The other is a question and answer sheet. And I encourage all veterans to read these VA documents.
I mean, now where can they get those documents?
Now on the VA website. They were forced to put it on the VA website.
Is there any website that you have access to where these things are readily available? Because you get on those websites, it just takes you forever to find things.
Oh, it's an ordeal to find things.
Do you have a website at all available?
Not to cover this.
Go ahead then.
They detail a plan to redefine, now get this, Dr. Stan, they detail a plan to redefine PTSD by altering diagnostic and treatment techniques that will then lead to a complete restructuring of VA compensation.
Now, by that PTSD, you mean post-traumatic stress
disorder. Post-traumatic stress disorder.
Post-traumatic
now,
stress
following
disorder.
Are a few excerpts from the VA fact sheet. The Institute of Medicine will review the utility and objectiveness of the criteria in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. Those are known as the DSM-4. And you're familiar with that, Dr. Stan, right?
No, I'm not. I think these are all just terms that are very vague. But anyway, the Institute of Medicine is not impartial. Unfortunately, they've come up with some incredible decisions as far as autism is concerned. And they were simply a cover-up for the Centers for Disease Control. And they recommended, we don't know what autism is caused by, but we're sure it's not mercury and there should be no further studies. This is not an impartial decision or a scientific decision. It is a political decision, and if the VA is going to the Institute of Medicine, it is a travesty of justice.
We would have figured that the VA would hook up with the IOM and with the Veterans Disability Commission. Now, I'm going to comment on the validity of current screening instruments and their predictive capacity for accurate diagnosis. Now, just listen to this a minute, Dr. Stan. This will allow the VA to write an alternative definition of PTSD exclusive of the DSM-4 and institute new methods of treatment outside normally accepted guidelines. Now, I wonder what the American Psychiatric Association has to say about this. I'm sure it's not good.
All right, well, hang on there. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we're talking with Arthur Bernclaw from Veterans for Constitutional Law. And, of course, the important thing for people to understand is government always makes promises that it can't keep. And, of course, it does this to buy the votes of the people and to make people believe everything is fine. Our government has made commitments for somewhere between $50 and $70 trillion it does not have. So how are you going to get around that? Well, you've got to cut back on benefits in one means or another. We see this with Medicare, where every year now they're raising the deductible rate. They do it just a little at a time to keep there from being a major outcry from people, but the truth of the matter is there's no way we can continue putting out the amount of money for free medical care for the elderly as we are, because the money is not there. They're doing the same thing with Social Security. They're going to raise the age of retirement up initially to 67 and then probably down the line to 69. Oh, they're going to do it a few years in the future, and of course hoping there'll be no great outcry, but it's the only way to make these programs financially stable. And of course, with the Veterans Administration, there's no way they can pay the money that the veterans are entitled to, especially as they keep creating new wars as we go off overseas to fight new dragons. So they've got then to cut back on the benefits that have been guaranteed and are provided by law and are authorized by Congress, because there's not the money to pick up the story there.
Okay, now also, the IOM will review the literature on compensation practices for PTSD and how changes in the frequency and intensity of symptoms affect compensation practices for PTSD, assessing how compensation practices and reevaluation requirements for the PTSD compare with other chronic conditions which have periods of remission and return of symptoms, and reviewing strategies used to support recovery and return to function in patients with PTSD. And this is going to allow the VA to lower PTSD compensation based on frequency and intensity of symptoms and remission and return of symptoms. The VA is also going to be looking to deny PTSD benefits based on the concept of recovery and return to function. Now, VA Secretary Nicholson has often used the word recover, which is terribly close to the word cure, when speaking to veterans with PTSD, and the IOM reviews should be completed within a year. Now, one thing that's not taken into fact, PTSD is not curable. It could be remission from time to time, but it is not curable. And the two big surprises that have filed...
We'll have to hold that thought there for just a minute, Arthur, as we bring our other stations back on board here. All right, this is Dr. Stan, and Arthur is pointing out that the Veterans Administration wants to change the definition of at least the certain things surrounding post-traumatic stress disorder, and saying, well, if there are remissions and exacerbations, why, we shouldn't have to pay them all the time, we shouldn't have to pay them as much. Everything is being done to cut back on the payment to veterans, many of whom are actually suffering, and the problem with, especially after the first Gulf War, was that many of these people who had the Gulf War illness, Veterans Administration says, we're not going to pay you, for Gulf War illness, because it doesn't exist. Doesn't matter how sick you are. Doesn't matter if you have all these autoimmune diseases, all these disabling symptoms that come with this symptom, which is very, very close to chronic fatigue. We're not going to pay you for that, but we will pay you for post-traumatic stress. So many of the veterans of the first Gulf War got a rating of post-traumatic stress. They did not have post-traumatic stress. They had Gulf War illness. But you see, by putting them into post-traumatic stress and getting the veterans to admit that, because they just wanted to get some compensation so they could take care of themselves and their families, now the Veterans Administration comes along and wants to reevaluate. The government forced them to accept a diagnosis that was inaccurate, and now the Veterans Administration is going to reevaluate the inaccurate diagnosis they put on these veterans to try to take it away from them. So pick up the story there.
Here's the two surprises, Dr. Stan. Surprise number one is the VA has not announced that Secretary Nicholson is examining compensation for all health conditions. Veterans can only look forward to fewer benefits and lower compensation with Nicholson directing this endeavor. And the second surprise is Secretary Nicholson's mention of the Veterans Disability Benefits Commission. Supposedly, by law, it's independent of the Department of Veterans Affairs. However, to discover that they are coordinating their efforts is no surprise, and to discover that them and the VA agree on almost everything, of course, is no surprise either. Now, sometime early in 2007, after the elections, VA Secretary Nicholson is going to be on with reports from VDBC and the IOM, and we can expect a two-fisted attack on veterans' benefits and compensation from an administration that's the first to shout, support our troops until they become veterans. Now, here's a couple of websites that you might want to look at. One is http://www.VAWatchdog.org/ VAWatchdog.org. And the other is Phil Cushman, Veteran Due Process, has an interesting website. His email address is vetduproc, V-E-T-D-U-E-P-R-O-C at AOL.com. You may want to look at his website. And this man Nicholson, I'm back in touch with Senator Patty Murray and the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, and they're not closing me out of this. I'm coming right after Nicholson, and I've contacted veterans in 38 cities across the country the last few days, saying we've got to get out there to the main office in Washington where the VA is most sensitive about having demonstrations. We've got to get out there, and we've got to demonstrate. And we've got to have people from each city out there. And so far, what I'm getting from these guys, of the 38 cities that I contacted, 33 of the 38 says, let's wait until spring when it's warmer weather. I can guarantee you Mr. Nicholson is not waiting for warmer weather. I think we've got to get in there and hit this guy now and take this guy out of there, because this fellow Nicholson, with his behavior about taking this end run around Congress and defying what Congress said, you can't do this. This is a very brazen individual, and his job is one thing in particular. Mr. Bush hired him to cut benefits, and that's what he's going to do. He has declared a war on vets, and if these lazy guys don't get off their behinds and start doing things, Mr. Nicholson is not going to wait. We've got to take the fight to him. And I'm in touch with everyone who I consider a veterans advocate around the country, and I'm trying to encourage him to meet at one central point on Vermont Avenue, right in front of the VA central office.
And when is that going to be?
I'm trying to do it as early as possible, but right now, 33 of the 38 cities I've contacted says, let's wait until the spring, until it's warmer weather. And that's simply not the way to do it. But, of course, I'm in the minority there.
Well, I would certainly try to get the thing, at least try to get it dramatized so people really understand. And the one thing, of course, that the administration fears is that a young man are going to find out that if they are injured in combat, they will be betrayed by their government.
Absolutely.
And that is the standard policy. It always has been the standard policy, and it always will, because of the very nature of man and the very nature of government. And when they don't need the fighting men, why they abandon them. So pick up the story from there.
Okay. There is another item here that I wanted to go over with you. Apologies and excuses at the Veterans Administration case sentencing. Are you familiar with what has been happening in the Stratton VA hospital in Albany? That's their cancer research center.
You go ahead and tell us.
Okay. Man who admitted apologies and excuses at VA case sentencing. Man who admitted guilt in Stratton hospital scandal claims he was used by his boss. Albany. A former cancer research specialist at Stratton VA Medical Center cast himself as a pawn who followed orders before a federal judge sentenced him on Monday to nearly 6 years in prison for falsifying records to push dozens of patients into experimental drug programs. At least one veteran died and 64 others suffered unduly or were harmed by the forgeries, which involved manipulating their medical background so they would qualify for drug studies that were lucrative for the hospital and which furthered the researchers' careers. Paul H. Cornack, 54, who posed as a doctor at Stratton, even though he never finished medical school, apologized for his crimes, but told the judge he was used by the hospital's former cancer research director, Dr. James A. Holland, who was fired along with Cornack shortly after the scandal broke 3 years ago. In January, Cornack of Clifton Park pleaded guilty to one count each of mail fraud and criminally negligent homicide. He collaborated with the investigators and offered to testify before a grand jury, but there is no indication from federal authorities the probe will be widened. In court Monday afternoon, as the widow of one veteran sat 20 feet behind him, Cornack spoke publicly for the first time, apologizing and calling himself a figuratively and literally broken man. I do, however, wish to state for the record that every action and decision in this case was ordered and prescribed by the program director Holland, Cornack said, without naming his former boss. It was a decision that all patients should fit into this study, and that without any consequence to those affected, I wish to further state that even though I accept all the responsibility, I was used and not given a full opportunity to express myself to him at that time. U.S. District Court Judge Frederick J. Scullin, Jr., who is a veteran, told Cornack that his criminal history, a felony conviction in Pennsylvania in 1992 for forging a medical license application, undercut his credibility. Scullin sentenced him to 71 months, which the judge says is maximum allowed under federal sentencing guidelines. He also ordered Cornack to pay more than $638,000 to several drug companies whose studies were undermined by the scandal, said Jane Stubling, whose husband Carl, a decorated World War II Army veteran, died at Stratton in 2002, 2 weeks after being given an experimental breast cancer drug to treat his cancer. The death of Stubling, who is a widely known music conductor and former director of fine arts at the Scotia Glenville School District, led to the mail fraud charge against Cornack because he falsified records that he mailed to a drug company regarding Stubling's treatment. James Stubling, who attended Monday's sentencing, was one of several Department of Veterans Affairs. Cornack and Holland, who was identified by federal authorities last year as a target in the criminal investigation. The criminally negligent homicide charge against Cornack was filed in connection with the death of James J. DiGregorio, a 71-year-old Air Force veteran from Brunswick who died at the hospital in June 2001 while being infused with experimental drugs. Stratton officials have said they were victimized by Cornack, and they contend he was never authorized to treat patients. However, Cornack openly served in a doctor's role, including treating patients and about research. Several widows of veterans said Cornack was introduced to them as Dr. Cornack, and he gave them VA-issued business cards that indicated he had a medical license, which he does not. A Times Union investigation found that Cornack's cancer research program was the target of dating to the mid-1990s. Hospital staffers said they were retaliated for warning hospital administrators as early as 1994 that cancer patients were being placed at risk and being enrolled in drug studies without signing consent forms indicating they knew the risks.
In other words, the people there at the VA knew what they were doing, and are any of the people in the hospital administration being indicted?
Oh, yes. And the hospital administration retaliated against the whistleblowers.
I know, but I mean, is the government going after the hospital administrators?
Yes.
Okay,
the government is going after the hospital administrators.
Good. Okay,
definitely.
Fine.
Anyway, Cornack's case triggered nationwide reforms in hiring practices at the Department of Veterans Affairs hospitals. And despite his criminal record, I get this, despite his criminal record, Cornack was hired at Stratton in 1999 despite never having finished medical school. He was dismissed from St. George's University School of Medicine in Granada in 1984 for falsifying transcripts, and on his federal employment application, Cornack also allegedly lied about his undergraduate performance at Rose in Albany and stated he had never been convicted of a crime. I mean, this man had a track record. At Stratton, Cornack was eventually put in charge of research duties that included recruiting veterans for drug studies. At the time he was hired, the VA did not require background checks for jobs such as Cornack's. Now, Dr. William H. Hrushky, who headed the research program, and agreed to hire Cornack, admitted in an interview 2 years ago that some hospital officials at that time knew about Cornack's troubles. Hrabowski told DNA Incorporated, a healthcare publication, that he and two other physicians agreed to give Cornack a job because he had presented himself as someone with a significant medical experience, with a wife and two kids, and no obvious way of making a living. He gave us a resume with an MD on it, and it had a lot of gaps. We decided to give him a chance. Oh, boy. Cornack allegedly said Hrabowski told Hrabowski he had been unable to get a license because he couldn't document having attended his first year of medical school in Poland. Federal authorities have said there is no proof Cornack ever attended any medical school there. In all, Cornack victimized 27 veterans who were afflicted with cancer and 38 others who were enrolled in drug experiments for hardening of the arteries. The 65 patients were completely unable to avoid or protect themselves from the defendant's crimes because they were unaware that he was altering or falsifying their medical records, said a memorandum by the Assistant U.S. Attorney General. Still, authorities have never offered a clear motive for Cornack's crimes. In court Monday, they suggested Cornack's motivation was to advance his own career. And Anthony Mariano, Stratton's former pharmacy director, said he and Jeffrey Feuden, another Stratton pharmacist, went to the FBI 6 years ago to report allegations of widespread corruption in the embattled hospital. And as early as 1995, they had warned that patients with cancer and other illnesses were being placed at risk or had died because of the way experimental drugs were being used. Patients were also enrolled in drug studies without signing consent forms indicating they had been informed about the risk. Instead of investigating the allegations, hospital administrators allegedly retaliated against the men and ended the pharmacy's role in monitoring research drugs, according to court records. Mariano eventually was forced out of his job, and Feuden was fired, but later had his job reinstated by a federal court. Oh, this is some mess, Dr. Stan.
And, of course, this is a government Veterans Administration hospital.
That's the prime research for cancer in the VA.
Right.
And that hospital is the prime research center.
And as difficult as it may seem, this is not uncommon. They use our prisons many times for experiments and with diseases that have gotten into the, as they did in Huntsville, Texas, with diseases that got into the guards, that got into the family, and created an epidemic of Lou Gehrig's disease, multiple sclerosis in that town.
Oh, God.
And that story
yes.
has been covered up for many years, and it's covered in a book we carry called the Project Daylily, Project Daylily. But let's get back to you. We've only got a couple more minutes, Arthur. It's a fascinating story you're telling.
Well, anyway, for people who want to contact me, talk about Veterans Affairs and what's going on with the VA, anyone who may want to donate to our worthy cause, I'm Arthur Bernklau, and I'm executive director, and our organization is Veterans for Constitutional Law, and we do help veterans, and we do help veterans fight their cases with the VA. And if we're on the job as watchdogs, they're extra careful if they know we're on the job. We can be reached at 112 Jefferson Avenue, and that's in Port Jefferson, New York, 11777. 112 Jefferson Avenue, Port Jefferson, New York, 11777. It's Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited. And
I'm sorry, give me that zip code one more time.
I'm sorry, it's 11777.
11777, that's 112 Jefferson Avenue, Port Jefferson, New York, 11777. Go ahead.
And we can be reached by phone, day or night. You can call us. We're at 631-474-4261. And I have to urge all of you people who have cases pending against the VA, get to your file, make an appointment at the VA to examine your own file. Do not do this with a service organization. Do not have the service organization and the VA official meet where your file is, because you'll find stuff will start disappearing from your file. But go down there yourself and meet with the VA and ask to see your records and ask to have your records copied. And to call us, we're at 631 4261. We're at your service. We do not charge you anything to help you in your case.
And Arthur, God bless you for what you're doing and for helping veterans all across America. And we'll look forward to having you on again here in the not-too-distant future.
And thank you very much for your time, Dr. Stan. And I hope we've been informative about what's going on.
You've done a good, great job. A great program tonight. Thanks very much.
Thank you again.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and I thought maybe we might read you a poem, one of my favorites. It's called The Unknown Soldier. There's a graveyard near the White House where the unknown soldier lies, and the flowers there are sprinkled with the tears from mother's eyes. I stood there not so long ago with roses for the brave, and suddenly I heard a voice speak from out the grave. I am the unknown soldier, the spirit voice began. And I think I have a right to ask you some questions, man to man. Are my buddies taken care of? Was the victory so sweet? As that big reward you offered selling pencils on the street? Did they really win the freedom they battled to achieve? Did they still respect the croix de guerre above the empty sleeve? Does a gold star on the window now mean anything at all? I wonder how my old girl feels when she hears a bugle call. And that baby who sang, "Hello, Central, give us no man's land." Can they replace her daddy with a military band? I wonder if the profiteers have satisfied their greed. I wonder if a soldier's mother ever is in need. I wonder if the kings who planned it all are really satisfied. They played their game of checkers, and 11 million died. I am the unknown soldier, and maybe I died in vain. But if I were alive and my country called, I'll do it all over again. And ladies and gentlemen, we have brave men fighting in Iraq today who believe that they're fighting for liberty. Unfortunately, as they fight in Iraq, we are losing our liberty here at home. There is a planned program to begin monitoring each and every one of us by satellite. They're tapping our telephones. Oh, of course we're doing it to thwart the wicked Osama bin Laden, who's living in a cave in Iraq someplace. They're monitoring our emails and our faxes. Videos are being placed on our highways and on our street corners and in utility stores and in service stations across America. And increasingly, every one of our actions are monitored. They're watching actually what we do as far as our bank accounts are concerned. They're watching what we do as far as our books we take out of the library. You have to understand there is a planned program, and the war in Iraq is a great diversion to keep us from understanding what's happening here in America. If we really value the lives of our soldiers and their heroism, then we must take a stand to try to preserve freedom here at home. So those who are dying in Iraq and have died in Arabia before and in Vietnam and in Korea in the Second World War will not have died in vain. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and first, those of you who listen to our program regularly, I realize that we believe that there is a spiritual battle going on today, and that there are powerful forces working behind the scenes intent upon creating a one-world government, and that's why they're not trying to stop the immigration from south of the border, because they want to have a multicultural society so that they can play one group against the other, so they can keep our attention focused on foreign wars as our freedom is taken away from us here at home. There are people who are dedicated to this idea of uniting the Western Hemisphere, and that's what CAFTA and the Free Trade Zone of the Americas is really all about, and uniting Europe, and that's what the European Union is about, and uniting Asia, which was what the ASEAN is all about, and then they will merge us all into this one-world totalitarian state. And the idea was laid out long before Plato recorded it in his book, The Republic. Plato was deeply involved in the occult, as was his disciple Aristotle, as was his disciple Alexander the Great, who set out to conquer the entire world. And that has always been the goal, that has always been the objective. And that time is closer now than ever before. The one man who has accomplished more towards that goal than any other man who ever lived was Cecil Rhodes, who created the Rhodes Scholarship and a secret society, and that secret society became the Council on Foreign Relations. Six of our last 12 presidents have come from the membership roles of that organization, and every Secretary of State since Cordell Hull has come from there, and every Director of the Central Intelligence Agency, and every Chairman of the Federal Reserve Board. Do you think that's just by accident? And what is their goal? The leadership has a goal. A new world order. A new world religion. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, let me suggest that you get our information. You can go to our website at www.radioliberty.com. If you'd like to read about the occult hierarchy, that rules the world, go to our website at radioliberty.com and pull down our newsletters on that. Or, of course, we have the little pamphlets called The Occult Hierarchy. If you'd like a free newsletter entitled The Occult Hierarchy Part 2, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We'll be glad to provide you a free copy of the newsletter on The Occult Hierarchy Part 2. And, of course, if you'd like to understand why the price of heating oil and natural gas and electricity is going up, you want to get our newsletter, Peak Oil 2. And they're all available on the Internet, free of charge. You can pull them down and copy them. But if you'd like to get a free copy of a newsletter, we'd be glad to send you one. Call us at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you're listening to the Here's Help radio network rebroadcast, remember we're on every Saturday morning at 12:30. And then your job is to tell other people about our program, to encourage them to listen, to encourage them to support Radio Liberty as we reach out 5 hours every day, trying to bring the news behind the news, the story behind the story, the realization that we're fighting a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And so until we're together again, may the Lord be with you.